we feel like we're in a tooth business or in a healthcare business or in, you know, dentistry, and we are, but ultimately we're in a customer service industry.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. We all understand the importance of having a fantastic front office team because that is the first experience many patients will have with our practice. So in today's episode, we're having a conversation with Laura Hatch, who runs frontofficerocks.com, which is a training program for front office staff. In today's episode, Laura is going to explain the exact tips, techniques, tools that she and her husband used to start not one but two practices in heavily populated, saturated areas with dental schools pumping out graduates all over the place. Not only did they start these practices, but the second one was started immediately after the GFC. So some of the most difficult and trying economic circumstances to start a practice, and they've been able to utilize these skills to grow their practice from nothing to booming in a fairly short space of time. So in the conversation, we cover a broad array of topics: front office communication, morning huddles, routines, systems, all of those things that go into making a team, and specifically a front office team, really rock. So I really hope you've got some pens and paper handy, because in this conversation, Laura drops loads and loads of value bombs. You're definitely going to want to come back and listen to it twice and reflect on the notes and, of course, take action on the material that you learn. So without any further ado, here's Laura Hatch from frontofficerocks.com. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I had bringing it to you. Laura Hatch, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. How are you going over there in the States?
It's wonderful, actually. It's actually a little chilly. I'm in San Diego, and typically I'd say the weather's great, but we're a little chilly, but I can't complain because most of the weather time in San Diego, it's amazing.
Yeah, fantastic. San Diego's got a reputation for being an extraordinarily livable city, so I'm a little envious at the moment. It's winter here, and I'm green with envy, as they say.
We definitely pay to be here, that's for sure.
Cool. Laura, now you are the founder of Front Office Rocks, and which is a phenomenally successful business, and you've, you know, got lots of material that you share, and I've been following your material now for a little while, and it's really wonderful. So firstly, congratulations on the service that you provide to the community and the profession at large. But what I wanted to ask you, I'm always curious to understand people's backstory. How did you come to be in a position where you're running this business?
Well, so my story started much like a lot of office managers. I didn't grow up thinking one day I was going to be a dental office manager. I sort of fell into the role. I met a guy in undergrad and asked him what he wanted to be when he got older. And he said a mechanic or a dentist. And I wasn't necessarily going for the dental. I don't think I ever thought about it, work in a dental industry. But my husband decided he wanted to be a dentist. So flash forward, he went to University of Maryland Dental School and decided to open his own scratch practice outside of Baltimore. So he came to me. My background is organizational development, training, management, you know, HR. And he came to me and said, you know, I'm thinking about opening a scratch practice. You know, why don't you run the front? I'll be in the back and it'll be amazing. So that's really kind of how I stumbled into dentistry, was, you know, to help my husband get started. And determined at that time, or even now, that there's really just not a lot of training. I didn't know anything about dentistry. You know, I knew customer service, I knew sales, I knew systems and human resources, but there wasn't a lot on learning dentistry. I went and saw, you know, Linda Miles, I'm sure you've heard of her, and all the big speakers. I read all the articles, but I just kind of had to figure it out, much like many people who fall into this role of just, like, you know, what we wanted to accomplish with our practice. And we grew our office outside of Baltimore, and we were doing quite well, planned on living there forever. But we came to San Diego in 2006 for training, fell in love with the weather, moved across country in 2007, and decided to open our second practice, or the second scratch practice, in San Diego in 2008. So I've had experience of opening a scratch practice on the East Coast and the West Coast. Good economy, bad economy, less competition, more competition. Like, we've kind of seen it all. And we now have a very successful fee-for-service practice in San Diego. And I realized through the years that I wasn't the only one that was having challenges hiring and training staff and implementing the customer service part of it. So that's where I came up with the idea for Front Office Rocks. So the idea is to have a resource for dentists all over the world who can bring it into their office and help train their new employees, their current employees, to be able to teach them the things that they need, because there's really not much out there to teach us at the front office. So that's kind of my story and how I got into the idea of doing an online training website.
So I'm really curious to ask about, 2008 was obviously a fairly tumultuous year in the global economy. And of course, like you, I sold my first practice in around that time as well and relocated and then moved around a little bit. How did you find starting up the scratch practice in San Diego in probably the thick of the GFC and all that was happening there? That would have been, I'm assuming it's obviously worked out really well, but I'm assuming there was a few hairy moments in there.
Oh yeah, it was definitely, we had really not even done our homework very well. Honestly, we came out here for the weather and we thought, oh, we'll just, open a practice. It'll be easy. Because of course it was easier for us on the East Coast in 2003. And I mean, even when we were deciding to move out here, after we'd signed the paperwork to sell our practice, I asked my husband, can you even practice dentistry in the state of California? And he's like, oh, I don't actually know. So we didn't do a lot of research. So we got here and we kind of got blindsided, not realizing how much competition there was, not realizing we're 20 minutes away from Mexico. So a lot of patients go to Mexico to get, less expensive dentistry, not realizing the economy was, we didn't know the economy was tanking the way it was. So it was difficult. Our biggest reason we decided to open scratch practice again was at the time, dental offices here were selling at 125% of collections.
Wow.
And to me, that just seemed ridiculous to go buy someone's practice that for more than it was worth. And we knew we could start again. We had done it before. We knew we'd learn from mistakes we made the first time and what went right. And we just, jumped in and we started fee for service, which everybody said we were crazy. And, two, 3 years in now, our peers are asking us, how did we do it? How do we grow? And it's really about taking care of the patient, being there and having your systems in and customer service, and the patients will come. And so that's a lot of behind the training, that I do. So it wasn't easy, but we did it. And now we're doing quite well.
Yeah, fantastic. And kudos to you, because that period of time, I think all of us had a few deep breaths there when we thought, oh my goodness, what's going to happen here? And obviously you've come through it as we have as well. I wanted to just jump into a couple of things, particularly around the front office role, because it is probably one of the most crucial roles in a dental practice. It is oftentimes the first experience a patient will have with a practice. And so it really is the window into the practice. But what I find with talking to lots of dentists and even some front office people, some people seem to have the view that you've kind of got to be born with this genetic skill set that allows you to take on such a role. But my belief is that it's a skill like any other that can be trained. Do you have a view around that?
Yeah, I think that, we have to remember what business we're in. I think a lot of times we feel like we're in a tooth business or in a healthcare business or in, dentistry, and we are, but ultimately we're in a customer service industry. We're here for our patients. And if we're not fully taking care of our patients, we're not going to be working on a lot of teeth. So I think it's kind of backwards. A lot of dentists I've found feel that they have to hire somebody that has 5 years dental experience up front, or that knows dental codes or the practice management software. But we can train on teeth and surfaces and dental codes. We can't train personality, or it's a lot harder. So I do think that, I don't think it's hard to find somebody who's great at the front desk, but I think we need to recognize, what are we looking for? We're looking for somebody who's good at selling, who's good with patients, who understands the importance of customer service, who puts the patient first and isn't beaten up by being, so driven by insurances or patients, being upset about things or whatever. We need to have the right attitude all the time. And so I think we can find those people and we can train them and it's not that hard, but we need to make sure we know what we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I couldn't agree with you more. Having that right person in that role is critical. One of the things I'm curious to ask you about is, when you go through the recruitment process, it is easy enough to find some people. But notwithstanding that, there is a process that you would go through. I'm wondering, what is the process you go through to find these gems of people to come into your practice?
Well, like I said, the first thing I do is, especially for the front desk, I don't require dental experience. You know, if they have it, that's a bonus. But sometimes it's not even a bonus. Sometimes it's a detriment, because that means you're bringing someone else's, you know, culture into your practice. So I don't look for that. I write, one of the big things is we always make sure that I write an ad that attracts the right kind of people.
It's sales copy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because you're trying to attract someone. And a lot of times, especially right now, you're trying to attract someone that's probably has another job, and you know, not just somebody who's sitting at home looking on the internet. So you've got to write it attractive, and you have to write it to, you know, very conservative, detail-oriented people are going to respond to very detail-oriented advertisements. People who see an advertisement that's happy and exciting and wants to help patients grow and get better, and that's going to bring in that kind of a personality. So taking the time to write the ad well is important. Not to cut corners on reviewing the resumes. And I have a lot of tricks about that. Like, you know, I give them instructions to tell us why you think you'd be good for this position. And if they don't respond and you just get dear hiring manager, that's a sign that the person's probably not good at following direction, you know, and they really didn't put it in. This is the person eventually you're going to have in your front office. So there's a lot of little things like that. And then when it comes to hiring, I mean, I have a background in recruiting, so I could probably write a book on this. I probably should.
Maybe you should. Yeah, there you go.
I should, right? But when you're sitting there interviewing, I think a lot of times we do more talking than we do listening. We really need to listen to their answers. Are they telling us products they've done in their past positions? Are they throwing past employers under the bus, or are they positive about experiences? Is it somebody you'd want to sit next to and work with? Are your patients going to like this person? Because I think so many times we wait until it's almost too late, and then we just sort of fit a round peg in a square hole. And then most dentists, once you get somebody, if they're not right, we're afraid to fire or let somebody go. And we can't do that, because then you end up holding on to somebody for 5 or 10 years that really wasn't a fit you knew from the first day. So there's a lot to building a really successful team.
Yeah. And one of the things you really touched on there really a little bit earlier was the concept of culture. And culture is critical, I think, in any business, but especially in a dental practice as well. In terms of your practice and what you teach your clients, how do you go about creating a culture with a specific intent? So it doesn't just happen by osmosis. You have some sort of intentionality about what you're creating.
Well, the first thing that I try to help with the training that I have is to get communication started. A lot of dental offices, you know, dentists, my husband went to University of Maryland Dental School, and it was an amazing dental school, but they didn't teach him how to run a staff meeting, how to set goals, communication, motivation, hiring and firing. And so it's typical that a lot of dentists don't communicate with their staff. They don't share what's important to them. Why are you doing what you're doing? What's your goal with your practice? How do you want to help your patients? You know, and a lot of that communication, when you actually put some thought to, you know, what kind of an office do I want to have? And what kind of a patients do we want to attract? And how do I want to help the patients? And then you share it with a team member or team that, you know, wants to grow, wants to help you. That's amazing. And that's when you build a culture that you can't stop, you know, a team that you can't stop. Because if your employees are good, they're going to want to help you. And if you just express what it is, where you want to go, what you want to do, it totally changes. And I know, because I've had wonderful employees and I've had some that were not great, and learn from that. So I think the first step is really just communicating, you know, why and what your purpose is.
Yeah. And coming back to the recruitment part, then you're looking for people who are going to slot into that culture. You're looking for those A players and immersing those A players into a great culture. And then obviously, once you've got these people and they're a cultural fit, I'm assuming, and I'm keen to hear your experience, is retention of those great team members becomes a much easier process when you've got everyone aligned culturally.
Yeah. And the thing, there's a couple of things. One of the things we're actually changing, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Spodek. He's in Florida. And I recently saw an interview of his and brought the idea to my team, because, and I don't think it's his original idea, but just a lot of times we interview somebody as the owners and we say, oh, this is a great fit. And then we put them in their job and the rest of the team members are like, well, what if we don't get along with them? So one of the things he kind of describes it as arranged marriage. Like, we're just like, okay, now go play together. One of the things that we're changing in our office is if I interview somebody and I think they're a good fit, I let that department, whether it's the hygienist assistants or front office, also interview and have a say on the employee, because they're going to have better buy-in to is that person going to fit? Are they going to get along? Are we going to be able to train them? Do we want to work with them? You know? So I think that's important. I think it's important to find somebody who does want to grow and help the practice. And then determining, like, what do you need in the practice? You know, if you've got somebody who's already really analytical and really good on one thing, but not super, I don't know, peppy with the patients, well, then let's identify where we could use some peppiness, you know, and hire somebody there. So it's definitely and if you wait too long, that's the biggest thing, you're going to rush. Hiring shouldn't be a rushing process. It's something that it's going to, you know, last hopefully for a really long time, which is what your point was. And my second thing with that is training is a big part of that. There's a lot of statistics out there that show that people know within the first week of their time on a new job, whether they're going to stay long-term in that job or not. And a lot of it comes from training. You know, how much training did I get? And in the dental offices, we're not good at training. We bring them in, we throw them to the wolves, we test them out on the phones. They get taught 7 different things from 7 different people, and it's really stressful. And that's why one of the reasons we have a lot of turnover in dental, I believe. So bringing in a training program like I have will help to help that first week, you know, help that employee get settled in, understand the rules, learn the dental, learn the terms that we're talking about, you know, to help them be successful and hopefully stay with the practice as long as possible.
Yeah, I'm a real believer that when you start people well, they continue well. And ultimately, you know, that whole onboarding journey is critical to get right, because, you know, if you get them up to speed and functioning really well and train them really well, then not only are they more engaged, more interested in staying, as you've already said, but productivity, you know, returns really quickly as well, because typically with staff turnover, there's a dip in productivity to a degree. And so we're trying to get back to that point as quickly as possible.
The other thing to recognize too is that just because you have great employees on your team who are really good at their job doesn't make them good trainers. And so that's really, I mean, I have a degree, a background in training, and there's a way to train somebody, and we can overwhelm employees. And if you don't train them a certain way, let them get it good at certain skills. If you don't teach them the why behind what they're doing, they start just doing a task without actually knowing the purpose behind it. And therefore then they're not necessarily helping the bigger goal, like we talked about earlier, to where the doctor is trying to, you know, grow the practice or take the practice.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, having a good understanding of why you're doing what you do is critical, because otherwise it becomes almost transactional, task-driven sort of stuff rather than, you know, thinking about the outcome you're trying to achieve. What I'd really love to explore for a moment with you, Laura, is just some, I suppose, some tactics, some nitty-gritty stuff, because I know listeners to the show will be saying, I get this, this is wonderful, but I've got a couple of scenarios I love a bit of a hand with. So I'm hoping I can pick your brains around how you'd handle a couple of scenarios, if that's cool.
Sure, of course.
Particularly around that front office reception kind of role. I wanted to ask firstly about telephone etiquette, because clearly there is a way to behave on the telephone. The old technique of, you know, smiling before you dial and all those sorts of things have been around forever and a day. But I'm wondering if you have any particular thoughts, A, around telephone etiquette, and then I might launch into a couple of scenarios if that's cool.
One of the things that I talk about a lot, and my training started with the phones, because that is the question that gets brought up the most. So that's really where I start my training, is receptionist training, because that's the first experience that most patients have with our practice. When I speak about this, I say I believe the most important piece of technology in the dental office is your telephone. And we don't give it enough respect. If you were to ask my husband, he would probably say it was the Cerec or the, you know, 3D cone beam. But if we're not handling the phones well, we're not doing a lot of Cerecs. So to respect the phone and understand that we need to train our team on that. When we're sitting at the front desk, it's insane at times. You know, you have 2 or 3 people in front of you. You're on the phone with an insurance company. The schedule just fell apart and the phone rings. And it sounds great to go, okay, we'll answer everything like all chipper and happy. But sometimes you're ready to just pull your hair out.
Yes.
You know, and you're just thinking, if one more phone line rings, I'm going to strangle somebody. But you have to fake it. And so when your team understands, before anybody answers the phone in my office, they're fully trained in my training on the phone skills and understanding the purpose behind it, because that is that first impression potentially for the new patient. And, you know, I don't care how stressed you are. I don't care how much stuff you have going on. You have to portray across that phone that that person's important to us or important to your practice. And it starts the whole experience with your office. And it really goes into the case acceptance, because if the patient feels they're bothering you, if the patient feels they're just a number, if the patient doesn't get that warm, welcoming feeling, they're starting to judge your office already before they've even come in. And now when we're sitting down talking about maybe a $5,000 treatment plan, they're trying to decide, do I want to spend that money here or not? And they're thinking about all the experiences all the way back to that phone call. So yes, we have to answer the phone with a smile and we need to slow down. And there's all the tricks to do it. But the biggest thing is that staff understands why that's so valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So specifically, you know, they'd be slowing down, they'd be smiling. What other things would you add into the mix there, which would just, you know, tactical, some little takeaways that people could go, okay, when I'm thinking about my etiquette, what do I need to remember?
Sure. So the three things I say before you answer the phone is you stop what you're doing. Stop what you're doing. Take a deep breath so that you slow down. Okay. And then smile. So and we have to think about, like, for example, let's say before the phone rings, the schedule just fell apart and I'm working on an insurance claim that just got denied and the patient's going to get a bill and I know the patient's going to be mad and I'm working on the schedule. You know, that's we're wearing a hat. We're in a certain role then, right? We're trying to fix the schedule and we're stressing and we're thinking of ideas. Well, when I go to answer that phone, I should no longer be a scheduler or an insurance coordinator. I need to become a receptionist. And what's the personality of a receptionist? Chipper, helpful, friendly. So I have to learn to take off that insurance coordinator hat or that scheduler hat and quickly put on my receptionist hat and move to that, hi, thanks for calling. I'm so glad we're here, you know, that you're on the phone. So that is, you know, even if you're not feeling it, smile, slow down, you know, and put aside whatever's in front of you and answer that phone because it's super important. The next thing that I suggest is to find a way to handle the first question they give you with a positive response. Patients are going to always call and say, do you take my insurance? How much is your crown? Do you have weekend hours? They don't know what to ask. They don't know what we know about dentistry, right? If they did, they would say, you know, how much CE has your doctor taken? And is there any lawsuits against your doctor? Like, but they don't know to ask that. So when they ask the question, that's all they know. And if we answer their question in a negative fashion, so no, we don't take your insurance, or no, we don't have weekend hours, or anything like that, that automatically, whenever you hear no and you're expecting to hear yes, you want to hang up. You want to end that conversation. So as soon as we answer something no, it's already putting that barrier between us and the patient. So I suggest, I'm not a fan of scripts. I don't think there should be scripts because they just don't work. But I do think your team needs to get good at taking any question and answering it positively. Like, yes, you know, we work with a lot of insurances here. Let me ask you a few questions and I'll explain. Or yes, in certain circumstances, we do have evening hours. Or yet, so to take something or spin it so it's positive, then take control of the call. Find out who they are. Why are they calling? Why did they ask that question? What do they want to know? Then you can handle their question. I'm not saying you shouldn't tell them, no, we're not a network for your insurance or whatever, but don't do it first. Say something positive and then take control of the call because the patient just doesn't know what else to ask. So that we want to be able to help them make the decision on us based off of what they really should be asking, not just, you know, how much is your crown?
Yeah, completely. You're absolutely right. Patients don't really know the right questions to ask. And interestingly, even with your existing patients, they can't judge the experience that they have based on the technical expertise of the doctor, right? They don't know how good the crown margins are generally, or they don't know whether the filling has got beautiful anatomy in it or whatever it happens to be. What they can judge is the experience that they have and the things that they observe themselves. So what I'm hearing you say is, you know, creating that experience, starting with that phone call, starting with a yes as much as possible is the very first step to creating a really wonderful experience. I wanted just to kind of go beyond that first step and start talking about some other steps in the patient experience. You know, what else is it that makes a patient think that, you know, I've had a really good time at this particular office and I want to come back? What things, you know, can be practically done to ensure that they're feeling the love?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the first thing is, you know, handling that new patient call and getting them to schedule sooner than later. My philosophy is, if possible, get them to schedule the next 2 to 3 days because they're motivated now. And if we don't, they're going to lose their motivation or something's going to happen or whatever the case may be. So we want to get them in sooner than later. We want to, the way we offer appointments are, it's super important, not even to our new patients, but just in general. You know, if I say to a patient, when do you want to come in? And they say, how about Friday? And I say, no, I don't have anything Friday. When else? How about Thursday? No, all we're doing is saying no again, right? So I want to say, do you have a day and time you'd like? Yes, I like afternoons. Awesome. I have Thursday or Friday afternoon, you know. So how we offer appointments, I personally think technology is important now. I mean, like you said, patients aren't judging us on the dentistry. They're judging us on everything else. And if you have to, they have to come in and fill out a 5-page, you know, or new patient paperwork, or if they can't email us, or there's all these different things that they're thinking that your dentistry may not be up to par because, you know, your technology's not. So I think that experience is important. And then when they walk in the front door, like I said, we get busy. We have insurance claims. We have patients on the phone. We have schedules falling apart. But that person walking in the front door is the most important person. Stand up, greet them, shake their hand, welcome them to the practice. You know, tell them there's coffee over there. Have a seat. We'll be out to get you. All of those things matter. And what happens a lot of times is we get so busy with what we have in front of us that we don't prioritize the patient. You know, we're busy with the schedule or talking to somebody sitting next to us, and we tell them to have a seat, and we're not building that rapport with the patient. And then, you know, the assistant comes out and calls them back and doesn't have a conversation with them. Like, all of these things, this is all part of their experience. Yeah. And they're judging us on it. And I'm sure you have the same issue we have. I mean, they can leave our office and go across the street and get dentistry done at another office. Yeah,
often cheaper too.
Yeah, exactly, right? So we need them to, every step of the way, be, you know, like, yes, I made the right decision. This is a great office. The experience is amazing, because they're not going to know whether or not the crown is amazing. Only we will, you know, unless it's bad, only we will. So it's really every step along the way that we're always putting the patient first.
Cool. I really love that. I wanted to just to follow on through that customer journey a little bit, the patient journey, because, you know, one of my sayings is that the purpose of an appointment is to have another appointment, meaning that I'm always trying to rebook the next appointment all the time. Yeah, and we have a whole theory around, or not whole theory, we have a process around building value for the next appointment, creating that value in the patient's mind and communicating that. What is it that you guys do to encourage rebooking of appointments specifically?
The few things that we always pre-appoint for the next appointment. That's just like, I mean, that's the policy of the practice. And actually, we were just talking about this today. We had a management meeting. We were talking about our hygienists and their verbal skills of, you know, of saying to the patient, you know, you look great. It seems like 6 months, coming in every 6 months is working great for you. It's super important that we get you booked for your next appointment. Like, that everybody understands how whatever they say is part of the process of getting the patient to book. The one thing that we do that's key, I feel, is that we, and whenever possible, try to sit down with our patients in our consultation room when talking to them about treatment. I know not everybody has a consultation room, but minimally, we have to realize, again, we're in a tooth industry, a tooth business, but we're in a people business. And when a patient's laying back and you've got drills or you know, probes in their mouth, and you're talking to them about dentistry, that is not the time to be trying to sell them or convince them to come to the next appointment or talk to them about a crown. You know, they're going to say, yeah, 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 just to get out of the chair. So really slowing down and taking the time, because if the patient doesn't fully understand the value of coming back for their next appointment, if they fully don't understand why they need what they need, you know, either they're not going to book, they're going to have to think about it, or they're going to schedule their appointment and then you're going to get a call the morning of and they're going to be coughing going, you know, I'm sick. And really they're not. They just weren't really sold on the appointment and the importance of it. So we need to slow down and prioritize presentations, case acceptance, as much as production. And a lot of dentists and offices, I feel, focus more on production than we do taking the time to have conversations and case acceptance with the patients. And there needs to be a balance to that.
Yeah, absolutely critical. I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that, you know, we talk about in our practice as well, and I'm sure you guys would have probably exactly the same, even if it's called something different, is we focus not just on the KPIs, the key performance indicators, the production and all the rest of it. We focus on the critical drivers or the activities. And it's things like having conversations. It's things like taking the time to have that case presentation and so on and so forth. And what I really love that you're saying there is all of those things are so critical, because it actually is what leads to the outcome. And sometimes we focus on the outcome rather than how to get there. So I love that you've hit that so squarely. I also wanted to talk about, because we spoke about that if we don't get the value built, the risk is that the patient's not sold on the appointments, that even if they schedule it, they might get the coughs and ring up on the day and cancel. So clearly the first part is preventing the cancellation by creating that value and communicating that. But how do you, you know, say you do to get that phone call of the cough and someone's trying to cancel on the day, what's the process that you have specifically for handling cancellations in your office?
Well, I think there's two different ways to handle it. I look at hygiene, our hygiene schedule and cancellations different than the doctor's schedule and cancellations. So if a patient's trying to cancel in the doctor's schedule last minute, more than likely it's a sales issue, which means we didn't fully sell the patient on the dentistry, or that we did and they went home and they got connected to somebody else who talk them out of it. So if that's the case, what we would do, if I have somebody who is canceling last minute in the doctor's schedule, I'm going to do everything I can if they won't come in, if I can't get them to stay in the schedule, to try to get them to come back for another consultation. I'm going to try to find out who they connected with. Was it a spouse? Was it their mom? And get that person to come, because the patient was sold when they saw the pictures and the x-rays, but then we sent them home with this hieroglyphic treatment plan that means nothing except for they see the bottom line of $3,000 or whatever. So I'm going to try to do that. And then, you know, for going forward with that patient like that, or anybody I'm worried about, before I put them in the schedule, I'm going to ask them to pay a deposit, or I'm going to have them pay, get a prepay and get a discount or something, because we don't know fully if a patient's on board until they pay, you know, or until they've given us the money. I mean, money is the way we know if we're, you know, sold or not. So that's really on the doctor's schedule. It's a sales issue. On the hygiene schedule, I think it's more of us, like you said, are prioritizing the importance of hygiene. And it's not something you can change in your practice overnight. I feel it takes 6 to 12 months to change what we've set up with our patients. We have gotten, if you have a lot of problems with cancellations and no-shows in hygiene, it's because the office is not prioritizing the importance of hygiene to the patients when they're in the chair or in the office. And we've been too lax with them about canceling in the past.
Yeah, because it's just a clean, right?
Yep. And you know, they'll cancel with us to get in with their hairdresser. Well, that's because if you cancel with your hairdresser, you can't get in for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
And right. Well, we've been too nice. And not that I'm saying we can't be nice, but we have to retrain our patients to not, you know, the last three times they canceled, and we said, okay, we've just taught them it's okay to cancel. And so we need to retrain our patients. So we need to make hygiene a priority. We need to talk to them about it. And then we need to retrain them. And it doesn't happen overnight, but you can do it. You can train your patients that hygiene is important. And if you continue to cancel last minute, we're not going to be able to pre-book you in the future. If we like you, we'll put you on a same day only list, but you can't just keep doing this to us in our schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, I have a saying that patients either train us or we train them. One or the other, someone's training someone.
That right?
And you know, it's better to be on the front foot with that. So I agree. I just wanted to come back to the doctor's schedule there, because you said something really important, and I want to make sure that the listeners really pick up on this, because there was a lovely gem that you shared there. And that is, if there's an issue with the doctor's schedule, it's usually around sales, and your first thing you're trying to do is get the patient back in for a consultation, you know, with the significant other or whoever is, you know, being influential in the decision-making process. But the point I really liked that I wanted to come back to and just clarify is, you're not trying to get them back in for treatment. You're getting them back in for a consult so you can then resell the treatment at that time, right?
Yes, that's the case. If I find that the patient is canceling because they've gone and, you know, somebody else told them, you know, root canals are awful, or that's a lot of money, or they're thieves, or whatever it is, I'm going to bring them back in for a consultation, because we either sold them or we didn't sell them well enough, and we have somebody else that we need to sell. If not, if you put them back in the schedule now for treatment, they're going to do it again. You know, that somebody has an influence on them, and we want to make sure that we get that person on board so they can support the patient getting the treatment.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely critical. So for everyone listening, I really hope you've taken note of that, because one of the most common mistakes I see is when people are trying to sell them on the treatment and get them in for the treatment rather than the consultation again. And same with incomplete treatment as well. If someone said yes, 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 and for whatever reason hasn't progressed, a common mistake I see is that people say, Mr. Jones, I know we haven't seen you for 3 months, but it's time for that crown, rather than getting them back in for the consultation to resell them on the crown.
Right. The other thing I would suggest is, if you've got somebody the first time you're presenting to the treatment to them and they want to go home and talk about to their spouse, or instead of sending them home with a treatment plan and say, okay, go talk to your spouse and let us know, I would almost not send them home with a treatment plan and see if I can get them to come back with the spouse for the second, for a consultation, because you send them home, you know, they think they just came to the office for cleaning. That's what everybody's coming for, right? And then you send them home with this MOD, DBO 12, 15, you know, they're going to say $5,000. Are you kidding me? So I would try to get that person back in when they see the pictures and they see the x-rays. And if they care about this person, then they're going to help you sell them and sell themselves on the treatment. But if you just send them home with a treatment plan, it's, you know, not even 50-50 chance, I'm sure.
Yeah. I really strongly endorse what you're saying there, because again, my experience is if you've met someone, a particularly new patient for the first time, and they're not even aware that they've got particular problems with their mouth and you're doing the examination, you're seeing all these things crop up. If you then present them with a $5,000 treatment plan, it feels like, you know, it's nice to meet you. Let's get married and have kids. You know, it's one of those, it's too much too soon. And I think there needs to be a process where the patient gets used to the fact that they've got issues and challenges. And I think that second consultation you spoke about is the absolute gem to get that done.
Even in the main consultation, the first consultation, I think one of the places we drop the ball is that we present the treatment to the patient. Like you said, they're coming in for cleaning. They have no idea they have any problems. And we present the treatment to the patient, and the patient goes, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money, or I only want to do what my insurance covers, or whatever. And then we leave it and we go, okay, well, we'll only do what the insurance covers, or we'll put a watch on it, or whatever. Well, we have to understand that that person wasn't prepared to even hear it. And they're in the buying process. And the first step, I mean, think about if you had to go buy, I don't know, let's say you were going to go buy a television. Like my husband and I, we were going to go buy a new flat screen television. And then we went to, you know, Best Buy and realized how expensive they were. And we were like, oh, hold on. Maybe we don't need a new flat screen, right? But you go through a buying process. You think, do we need a TV or not? Is our current one okay? Can I hold off until, you know, we get a raise, whatever. That's the same thing the patient's doing. When we're presenting to them that first time they're hearing it from us, they're just letting it sink in. And if we stop and we don't continue to discuss it with them and present it to them, we're missing that opportunity to really help them, because we haven't taken them fully through the buying cycle.
Yeah, absolutely critical. And you've got to meet them where they're at in their buying cycle for sure.
But we have this idea that we're healthcare professionals, we don't sell. Right. But we do. I mean, think about it. We put drills and needles in patients' mouths and they pay us thousands of dollars for it. So nobody really wants that. They want big screen TVs. They want cruises. They want trips. They want iPhones, whatever. That's a lot easier to sell than what we have. It would be weird to tell a patient, you know, you need a root canal, corona crown, and have the patient get super excited. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait. Let's do it tomorrow. Right.
Yeah.
People don't like what we do. We have to be good at selling it, because we do something that helps them live longer and live a better life. So we have to get over that idea, because the better we are at selling, the more patients we're going to be able to help.
Absolutely. Yeah. In my clinical experience, I've never had someone come in and say, hey, Jesse, I'm so glad to be here for my MOD composite today. They said no one ever, right? No one, right?
Yeah. If they did, you might send them away and be like, maybe we should do it another
yeah,
day.
Exactly.
You seem to have taken the happy juice.
Yeah, exactly. But even when they do come in asking for veneers or whatever, it's not the veneers that they want the smile, right? And so it's also understanding what people are buying, not what we're necessarily selling procedurally.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, Laura, just I'm so grateful for all the information you've shared with us today, and I just want to pick your brains once or twice more before, because I know it's getting later in the afternoon there, but I'm really grateful for the gems you're sharing. I wanted just to come back to, because we've spoken a little bit about money. How do you go about, I suppose, the financial negotiations for larger treatment plans? Do you break it down into chunks? Do you kind of give a discount up front for full payment, or is it a combination of everything? What's the sort of process you go through there?
It's funny you ask that, because I consider myself a trainer. You know, I speak in the industry and I help other offices, but I'm also still an office manager myself. So I'm trying to implement things. You know, I've got a lot implemented, but there's new things I'm trying to implement. So one is around this whole idea about presenting dollar amounts with treatment. So what we do currently in my office is we have the treatment plan. The doctor presents the treatment. We sit in there, the treatment coordinators. We answer questions. We handle all of the issues. And then when the patient's on board, the doctor leaves, and then we get into the details of the scheduling and the money. The way we do it currently is we have it broken down by appointment. And depending on the size of the treatment plan, let's say it's a longer phase treatment plan, they're going to do implants or ortho. You know, we might do phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. And then depending on if we're worried about the patient or not, if they're a new patient or a patient that's flaked us in the past, we may ask for a deposit to schedule the appointment, but we always offer 5% prepayment discount if they want to prepay for the entire treatment plan. Because in my mind, give them the 5%, but I know they're going to show up because they're on board, right? But one of the things my husband and I are debating back and forth, we both like the idea, but we just haven't really implemented yet, is a lot of people are talking about now of having the treatment plan without the fees broken down per procedure, per tooth. Just having a total amount, like this is your treatment plan and it's $4,000.
Because there's a shopping list otherwise, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, I'll take this, but I won't take that. Or, you know, we haven't done it yet. I really like the idea. I guess the biggest thing for me is just we have to do something outside of our practice management software because we don't have the ability to do it that way. What have you heard, or what are your thoughts on that?
Look, similar to you, I've done both ways. And so in our first practice, we would do the total treatment plan with one fee, and that was it, all inclusive. And then when we started our second practice, we've kind of reverted back to, itemizing it more. But like you, we're going away from that to a degree. We're going back to the original way we did it, which was, here's the treatment plan in totality, and here's the total fee for it. And you're quite right. It does mean we go outside our practice management software around that. So the practice management software was have it all itemized, but I'll create a one-page letter which will outline that. But going outside the practice management software, to be honest with you, is a bit of a pain in the neck. So I don't think there's a easy solution.
Do you find that patients negotiate less or stop nitpicking as much by doing it with one treatment fee?
I think it comes down to the skill with the presentation. And so it's like everything, it's practice. And we've found in the past that we've had nitpicking in both situations, where I've had some people say, here's the total treatment plan, and they'll say, well, break it down for me, and they're not content with the total number, in which case I then do break it down. And I always know that at that point I'm going to get a little bit of resistance around some elements of the plan. But if I've done my work well at the outset and I've used photographs, I've used some good verbal skills, and I've pre-framed different parts of the conversation, I find that that's less of an issue. So when I'm getting nitpicking, it's usually that I haven't done my job properly.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And that what you're talking about, I think is key. We were just talking about this today in my office about at the end of the day, it's the comfort level of the dentist. If you're comfortable with something, then you can implement it. The rest of the staff will follow along. So it's a matter of, okay, I need to present well to be able to have this work. And if I can, the team will follow and the patients will follow. So that's interesting. Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I think we're right around the corner from doing that.
Hey, Laura, you have shared so much wisdom with us over the last 40 minutes or so, and I'm incredibly grateful. And I know the listeners on the Savvy Dentist podcast are really grateful as well. What I'd really like to just try and round out today's conversation with is almost like a bumper sticker. If there was, three or four key points that you'd want to, distill as the absolute gems of wisdom, what would be three or four things you'd put on a bumper sticker for people to take away from today's conversation?
I guess experience is key. And we've talked about that. Patients aren't out talking about our dentistry. They're not going to go out of their way to refer to your office or write reviews about your office or get their dentistry done if they don't feel their experience is great. So experience is number one. And everybody in the team should be regularly training on customer service and training on making sure that those experiences for all your patients are great. I would say that the second thing would be understanding that patients don't want what we sell. People, we know we sell something that's going to help them live longer and live a better life, but people, I get my dentistry done for free by somebody I love and I don't necessarily get excited about it. Right. So, we have to understand what we sell isn't fun, but we can make the experience great. And if we're good at getting the patients to understand that they need it, we can really help a lot of patients. And then lastly, I think it would just be, communication with your patients and communication with your staff and making sure that the doctor's purpose is obvious and shared with your team and that your team, you have the right team following it. You do that, you get training in, get your customer service going and really get your patients to accept treatment. That's how you're going to turn around a practice. That's how you're going to grow a practice. That's how you're going to make it in a bad economy when you open a practice in 2008 in Southern California is really, you know, putting those into the four walls that you know your practice is in.
Yeah, absolute gold. If anyone's just, you know, taking notes on that, I'd really encourage you to highlight that 100 times over, stick it on your wall, and don't forget that, because that is absolute wisdom distilled. Laura, you have been incredibly gracious and generous. For people who want to find out more about what you do, obviously head across to frontofficerocks.com. Is there anything on the website there that you'd really direct people to check out first?
If you want to see on the homepage, there's sample videos. So I have over 180 training videos on the site, but there's one from each category that you can watch just to get an idea of what I train on and what the videos are about. So if you're wondering what online training is, because there's not a lot of people doing this, what I'm doing, I would say suggest doing that. You can click around the site and learn more about it. But if you want to see some of the videos, they're right on the homepage for free.
Fantastic. Laura, thanks again so much for coming on the show. I'm really grateful for your time and most importantly for your wisdom as well. You've been an absolute wonderful guest, and we thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I've been really excited. I think you and I planned this a while ago. I was really excited to see it come on my schedule and that we got a chance to talk. So thank you, and to all your listeners too.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.